From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, and today's show is built around one subject.
This is coffee.
Now, I'm not a coffee drinker, but I bet you are. In 2013, USA Today estimated 83% of Americans have at least a cup a day. Some drink more than that. Making a good cup of joe is an art, to be sure, but it also involves a lot of science. And since I'm not an expert, I turn to someone who is.
Hello, I'm Pierce Lamacchia with K-Brew.
Pierce runs two coffee shops, but more than that, he's a stickler for accuracy. For him, the best coffee starts with what comes out of your tap, the water. In this case, cleaner isn't always better. Minerals in the water give flavor molecules something to latch onto. Distilled or purified water doesn't offer that. And when you put the water into your coffee maker, you bring it to a nice rolling boil, right? No way. Lamacchia says the most common types of coffee don't require boiled water.
Water boils at 212, and we always like to be at about 195 degrees for a good cup of coffee.
In fact, those silvery boiling percolators, so familiar to a generation of Americans, can actually hurt the taste of your coffee, cooking the ground so much the resulting beverage goes right past robust and straight into bitter. And be warned, some home coffee makers have trouble getting up to the right temperature without exceeding it. Once you've got the temperature nailed, think about time.
If the water is hanging out with that coffee for too long, you're just going to have a bitter cup. And on the flip side, if the coffee and the water are not hanging out for long enough, you're going to have a very sour cup.
For virtually any type of coffee, the Specialty Coffee Association of America says you should shoot for 4 to 8 minutes of brewing time. And after you fill your mug, your wait still isn't over. Let it sit for a few moments. Pierce Lamacchia says as the coffee's temperature comes down, different flavors will emerge.
And you can actually use the thermometer, and you can log for yourself, you know, I'm tasting bacon at 140 degrees. I'm tasting banana at 170 degrees. And you'll find that coffee is just unbelievably complex. It's like a fine wine.
All right, so what about the good stuff, that jolt of caffeine that so many of us seek first thing in the morning? For that, turn to a finer grind.
We have found that brewing up in a finer grind, whether that is the placebo effect or not, does produce a higher caffeine sort of buzz.
Studies have shown more finely ground beans do yield more caffeine. But contrary to at least one popular rumor, the caffeine output doesn't have much to do with the type of roast you use. Just make sure it's finely ground, like an espresso. Timing the brew, paying attention to the grind, contemplating the mineral content of your water, all of this may sound alien, especially when you're used to making coffee a certain way. But by using a little science next time you brew up a pot of mud, you can avoid the lifelong sting that comes from bad coffee.
Darling, it's our anniversary. Why so glum?
Well, it's your coffee.
Again?
Honey, your coffee just doesn't taste any good.
We reviewed the science inside your coffee pot. Now, what happens when you drink the stuff? For that, we turn to Dr. Ted Fisher. He's the director of the Institute for Coffee Studies at Vanderbilt University. Yes, there is such a thing. And he's taken a close look at the chemical compounds that are unique to coffee. Matt Schaefer-Powell had a stimulating conversation with him.
I remember a time when researchers were telling us to stay away from coffee, but that's no longer the message. What's changed?
Well, a couple of things. One, I would say that we've long equated coffee with caffeine. And what we understand now from the science is that the benefits of coffee come not necessarily from caffeine, although you do get some benefits from caffeine, some short-term concentration and staying awake and all of those things that we associate with coffee and caffeine. But it turns out coffee has all these other properties. Drinking coffee is negatively associated with type 2 diabetes, with Alzheimer's, with liver disease, with various forms of heart disease, all kinds of things.
Well, we talk about coffee. A lot of the talk circulates around caffeine, and you just mentioned there's a lot more in that cup than just caffeine. What else is in there?
There are a number of chlorogenic acids and quinic acids, and it turns out that coffee contains these after it's roasted. So a lot of this activity starts after roasting. But it really doesn't matter whether you're drinking decaffeinated coffee or fully caffeinated coffee, whether it's instant or drip brewed or however you want to. The health benefits of coffee are associated with these other compounds. And so you can drink it in all sorts of forms, and it's still beneficial.
How important is moderation in your message?
Moderation is important. And so the latest USDA dietary guidelines say that up to 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day can be helpful. But that is coffee in itself. Anytime we put something in coffee, when you add cream, when you add sugar, you're slightly diminishing the effects of coffee. But recent research has shown that you have less of a likelihood of dying in the next 10 years, to be precise, if you were drinking 4 or 5 cups of plain black coffee a day.
You know, these days when you walk into a coffee shop, you'll likely hear something like, give me a triple shot, 1 shot decaf, 2 shots regular, no foam, Snicker Mochaccino with a straw. In terms of health benefits, what's the difference between some of those customized drinks and just a black cup of Joe?
Yeah, the health benefits really come with the black cup of Joe. And again, it can be decaf or it can be regular. But all of these other drinks, very often there's very little coffee in them. And so you're getting a lot of sugar, you're getting a lot of cream, you're getting a lot of fat, but you're not getting a lot of coffee. And what you really want are these chlorogenic acids in the coffee. You want these quinic acids in the coffee doing these, you know, these things in the body. They are antioxidant properties that are fighting the cancerous cells. They are neuroprotective, and so they are helping our synapses fire in particular kinds of ways that help protect us against Alzheimer's and Parkinson's.
Dr. Ted Fisher is the director of the Institute for Coffee Studies at Vanderbilt University. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
It was a great pleasure.
Before we leave, one last note on coffee science, that aroma. The unmistakable smell of coffee is a critical part of the experience. It's estimated about 800 separate chemical compounds are formed during the process of roasting coffee beans. About 20 major groups of them end up in a typical cup of coffee, and it's how those compounds react with hot water, proteins, and sugars that determine the smell of coffee. Without the aroma, organic acids in the coffee would make it taste unpleasantly bitter. Unfortunately, the best part of waking up is having aroma molecules enter your olfactory bulb. Just doesn't have that catchy slogan appeal, even if it is important. Thanks for listening to this edition of The Method. You can listen to our past shows online or download them through iTunes. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.